Joining us via the telephone line this morning is 64th District Rep State Rep Julie Alexander. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Steve.
Appreciate you getting up early and coming to spend a little time with us on a Friday.
Of course. Of course. Always happy to do so. And Steve, I'd like to start by offering to you my personal sympathy at the loss of our special Jamie as well. I shared that with Greg. And there isn't a day goes by that I don't think of him, especially when some legislation pops up in front of me having to do with being a sportsman or some memory or thought I have of him. So I just wanted to pass on to you my condolences as well. I know you at the radio station are a very close family, and my sincere sympathy to you as well.
Much appreciated. You know, it still doesn't necessarily feel real. You know, there's this little part of me that thinks that everything's going to go back to normal at some point, and I guess we know that that won't be the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so Julie, legislatively, a lot of stuff going on, or at least around government, and I don't know how much you're specifically involved in it, but I mean, let's start with the election stuff in the state. I'm getting mixed messages, maybe not the right word, but you're getting different perspectives on a lot of stuff, and you actually went to some of that testimony.
I did. I think it's most important that as a legislator, as a representative of the people here in Michigan, that I listen to the stories they have to tell. So this last week, earlier in the week, I believe it was Tuesday, the Senate Oversight Committee hearing was held, and they brought in many witnesses. I think they went on for a full 7 hours. So I sat there for a couple of hours, listened, and then I was able to listen, to the recording the rest of the day, or, I put my earbuds in and out, and then later went back and hit some of the highlights. But again, it's important to hear what the people have to say, what they witnessed. It's not a court hearing. It wasn't a situation, if someone tuned into it, that they could have expected maybe what they'd see on a television show, right, where it was clarification. It was just information being presented. Then on Wednesday night, the House Oversight Committee held a meeting, and I sat in on that as well. As you well know, Judy Giuliani and the other Trump attorney, Jenna, were there. They brought in some witnesses. Questions were asked. Stories were told. And that's what I was there just to listen.
Julie, is there a course of action going forward after this kind of stuff that you support or that you think should happen?
Well, that's a great question, and so we need to gather information to know what our options are. I think that's the first thing. So we know that our County Board of Canvassers have certified. We know that 3-0 vote, our State Board of Canvassers have certified. So now what happens next? We know that on December 14th, our electoral votes are given. There's information. There are options out there. Right now, just gathering information is where I am at as a legislator. You know, there's obviously a push to use our U.S. Constitution and move forward in that direction. Gathering information, becoming educated on what our options are is simply where I'm at right now.
Okay. Kind of the more information, the better, right?
Absolutely. You need to know what all of the options are and what that would trigger, how this all plays out. These are unprecedented times. And, Steve, my background is that I'm not a constitutional attorney. I'm not an expert on election laws. So I need to understand. I need to surround myself with knowledgeable people and learn all I can. And that's why it was so important that I listen into both the Senate and the House committee hearings to learn what options might be available, to hear the stories of the people. It's not about President Trump or President Biden. It's about election integrity. On election night, I had conversations with a handful of people, and I found 5 people that evening on election night that had never voted before. 2 were 18, and 2 in their 1 in their 20s, and 2 in their 30s, never voted before. They cared enough to vote this time. And the last thing we want is someone to say, my vote didn't matter. there's cheating, there's fraudulent activities. What's it matter if I vote? We can't have that. We owe it to every citizen in our country for them to have the faith and the trust in our election system that we get to the bottom of all of this. And the evidence that's presented is significant. I don't think this is the first year. A lot of these, the first election, a lot of these incidences have occurred. It's time we do something about it and put the integrity back in the elections that our citizens deserve, but our military, our veterans that have given their life for the freedoms our country has. It's what we owe to them as well.
Okay. Hey, Governor had a press conference yesterday afternoon, and I think the question on everybody's mind, of course, will we have an extension to the pause or shutdown, whatever term you best prefer to refer to it to, but during the actual press conference itself, no mention of that. It had to come up later in a question from a reporter, but have you heard anything different or more than we might have with the even speculative on whether or not the shutdowns would be extended?
I have heard nothing, absolutely nothing. And it has been that way since March. The decisions being made are being made completely through the administration, her departments, through the agencies. So we do not receive any information. We would ask that we could know what kind of metrics we're looking for. I get these are serious times. I understand the seriousness of COVID. I am so grateful for our health care, the individuals serving in health care that are working overtime, right? I get all that, and I get the seriousness of it. I get the individual responsibility each and every one of us need to take in this. But I would just ask the question, what are the metrics? What are we basing these decisions on? What do we need to do? Where do we need to be at in order to people to maintain their livelihoods? Because I still daily receive phone calls, emails, Facebook messages from friends, from neighbors of individuals that still have not received unemployment benefits back from the spring. I think it was, it's been less than a week now, probably 5 days ago now, someone said it's been since March. I said, since the beginning? Yep, haven't received anything. And in this case, it's just story after story, week after week. So these are livelihoods of people when they aren't able to go back to work to put food on the table for their families. So we need a better understanding. I take seriously COVID and the impact, but we also need to be having the conversation about the livelihoods that this is affecting as well.
Yeah, Julie, I think I saw a news story. I'm trying to recall the number exactly, but I believe it was around 90,000 that were still outstanding in their unemployment payments up to this point, even though, you know, there's millions that have received. That 90,000 number is still pretty significant. Of course, fraud has played a role in that. And I know that for a lot of people, your office was kind of a resource to maybe help them along the way in getting their unemployment claims filed. And part of the report of the fraud was that some of the fraudsters had even been so bold as to call legislators to try to help, you know, move along their fraudulent activity. Do you know if there's any possibility that someone contacted your office with that kind of a claim?
Well, that's a great question. The amount we were able to help is so limited. It's a matter of putting some data in the system. So we do not have access to the unemployment insurance system. We have, it's very preliminary, making sure that, you know, their name, understanding what information is being requested up there. So our our ability is more of a resource or a contact through the department, and then also there are subcontracted employees through Michigan Works, and Michigan Works has gone above and beyond their staff there and helping us as well. So we need to take very seriously the fraudulent activities. The problem lies, Steve, our oversight committee had the unemployment director testifying in front of the oversight committee, the House Oversight Committee, and they asked that question, what assurances are there? What is that? What is that line, that firewall, right, that protective mechanism? How do we know that the employees that you're bringing on through your department have not only, you know, the background and the ability to help, but are secure? And we were given assurances through committee meetings that everything was done and everything was safe there, and then to come find out it wasn't. You know, this is hard because every step you take, we want a solution, right? We want people to be able to get the money they've been promised and that they need to survive. At the same time, we want that to happen in an expedited manner. We have to be insured that protective mechanisms are in place, that fraudulent activities are not occurring. So I get this balance, but that's what we do as legislators. Steve, this last week, I put in a lot of long hours because the bill packages, for instance, one package that someone's been working on for years, it's to update the Sex Offender Registry Act. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this bill package, this is really important because those that are on the Sex Offender Registry Act on that list have violated horrendous crimes, right? So they need to be taken seriously. But you also have to balance it with what the federal courts have ruled. So we spent a lot of time looking into what that updated law should look like, and it's a balance. It's the same thing in every department. It's the same thing people deal with in businesses and in life, finding that balance, finding something that is right and fair for those here in Michigan when you look at the content of this updated law, but yet at the same time balancing that with what the federal courts have mandated our reporting requirements should look like. So they're challenging, but that's why you surround yourself with knowledgeable people. You become informed. You ask the tough questions, and you just keep working there for the people.
Well, you make a good point there, and I'll attribute it to Thomas Sowell, the economist, said that we often we believe that there are problems and there are solutions. But frequently, there are problems and then there are trade-offs where we make one thing better, but it might make something else a little worse. And that's kind of like you mentioned, the word trying to balance that is probably very difficult in maybe the most difficult aspect of being a legislator.
Yeah, it is. And I serve on four committees. So then, you know, in the committees, you do the deep dive and you really get into the legislation word by word, line by line. And then when bills come to you on the House floor, you then have to get up to speed on all of that. And I like to refer to lame duck as silly season because you just don't know what's going to be tossed at you next. And you just have to be on your toes. Again, I'm grateful for the people in our Jackson community that are my resources. This week I reached out to the JDOT director, Christopher Bolt. We had some legislation in front of us in transportation that would allow some modification of how we raise or lower speed limits. So it's kind of an 85 percentile rule, and it's been in place for quite some time. And one of the legislators was there with a bill in front of us. And, you know, I'm reading what he's sending. I'm listening to the testimony in committee. But the first thing I do is I shoot it off over to our people here in our Jackson community. He's asking our local road engineers what their thoughts on it. What can we do to make it better? What are some of the unintended consequences maybe of this mm-hmm. legislation? And again, I'm grateful for those that help me become better informed so that I can better serve all of us.
Julie, one more item I wanted to ask about. We've been hearing about you know, obviously at the federal level, kind of a back and forth with the House and Senate and those contained within it over an overall relief bill for the country. But in the state, proposal to the tune of $100 million, if I'm not mistaken, is that kind of where's that stand?
We're still in the negotiation process with that. You know, what does that look like? Where does it need to go? What oversight needs to be in place? Conversations are still taking place there.
And I guess the most basic question, after knowing that we have budget shortfalls planned, expected this year and next, at least, where does that kind of money come from in the state of Michigan?
Exactly. Okay, and here's another example, Steve, that allows me to share how I'm able to listen to those in our community. So right now, the city of Jackson has a significant revenue into the city when Jackson County residents that don't live in the city but work in the city, especially with we have an extremely very large employer, obviously, in the city of Jackson.
Uh-huh.
So if you work in the city of Jackson but you don't live in the city of Jackson, you still pay half of a percent, so 0.5% of your salary goes to city taxes. Well, if those employees are now working from home,
mm-hmm.
why and how should they be paying a city income tax? Because they're not working in the city, they're working from home. Okay, I get that, but that makes sense. But this week I had the opportunity to learn what those numbers look like for the city,
mm-hmm.
if that revenue source was lost. How does that impact them? And again, you can see in arguable sides of it, but then what are those consequences as a result? So there is some legislation, not 100% sure it will get through in the next 2 weeks while we're still there,
mm-hmm.
But it's definitely an issue we're going to need to address.
All right. Well, and those are notes to jot down for the next time you talk with GOC for an update. Julie, any last info here before we wrap it up?
No, again, my office, we are here to help. I was driving home from Lansing last evening, and someone else called with another issue on, again, a Jackson County resident, which is a challenge getting through to a department, no matter what it might be. Please feel free to call or email my office. We are here to help. And I will tell you, the other day we received, I don't know, I think it was 1,400 emails in the matter of like 3 hours. So the challenge then for my staff, who are so dedicated, but they've got to go through all of those and find which emails are from out of not just our state, but out of our country at times, but, you know, from all around the country, emails are flying in. So if for some reason, you know, we don't respond in a timely fashion, please just resend that. It's simply an oversight because of the number of emails coming in. But the email address is julialexander@house.mi.gov. And our office phone number, 517-373-1795. In our office, I've got people there answering the phone. And if they're not answering the phone, it's because they're on the line with somebody else. Not all offices do that, but this is the people's house. This is the people's building, and we're here to serve.
I appreciate it so much. 64th District State Rep. Julie Alexander. Have a great weekend, Julie.
Thank you, Steve.